The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words. And those taking part are Dillis Powell, Frank Muir, Anne Scott James, and Dennis Norden. Round one tries to test their respective vocabularies. Two marks if they get the meaning of these words right. We begin with Dillis Powell. Dillis, what's the meaning of blottesque? B-L-O-T-T-E-S-Q-U-E, blottesque.
Well, it's a very fancy way of saying blotto.
No.
No?
No.
Painted in blots.
Yes. That'll do. Two more.
Very clever. It was.
It's a piece of painting done with heavy blotted touches, or it could be a piece of descriptive writing done in the same way. That sounds rather horrible. Two more.
Can you give examples?
The Tachists. T-A-C-H-I-S-T-S. They did it.
Well, they painted with moustaches.
Dennis Norden. What's the meaning of bobbery? B-O-B-B-E-R-Y. Bobbery.
Well, bobbery is a combination of two words. You have robbery, which means stealing, and bob, which is slang for a shilling. Bobbery is stealing from gas meters. It's a legal term.
Short haircut.
Nope. No. There you're going to get it. It's a row, a disturbance, or a fuss. Or as adjective, it means somebody who's noisy or troublesome. I'm told it comes from Hindustani, and it's babre, which means oh father, which indicates a certain amount of dismay. That's bobbery.
Rather say it was a word.
Now, Anne Scott James. What's the meaning of extirpate?
Extirpate?
Yes, I'm not going to spell it for you.
Oh, it means to destroy root and branch.
Yeah, absolutely right. To destroy, to banish, to root out. And you can do it to a nation or a heresy or a species or a tumour or all sorts of things.
Fierce and for a feud. Fierce and for a feud against a clan McTaffish.
Oh, you are, you know.
Wandered into land to muster and to raffish. For he did resolve to extirpate the vipers. His 24 men and 35 pipers. Oh.
That's exactly it, Frank. Couldn't have that side. It's now your question. This one to Frank Muir. Frank, what is a julep? J-U-L-E-P. Julep.
It's a drink.
Yeah? What kind?
Well, if it's made with Dutch gin, it's a julep from Amsterdam. It's a little joke I put in there. Sense of humour relieves the monotony. And it's usually connected with the word mint, which chaps drank in the southern states of America because it was a cool drink and it was hot there.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Too much. Originally, it was a medicated drink, used as a stimulant or just as something which you drank down your nasty medicine in. And that was before it crossed the Atlantic to America. Well, before we begin round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down. And I hope that the two women members of the team will go on studying those quotations, because at the end of the program, I shall ask them where the quotation comes from. And Dillis Powell and Frank Muir, here's your quotation. And I was desolate and sick of an old passion. And then Anne Scott James and Dennis, here's yours. A soft answer turneth away wrath. And at the end of the program, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their idea of how these came to be said or written. Well, here's round two, which is the who, why, and what department. Two marks for correct answers. Dillis Powell, what was known in the old days as Scrivener's palsy? Scrivener's palsy.
It was a kind of shake, which came from writing too much.
There is a modern sort of phrase which describes it.
Is there?
I think you'll give me...
Not housemaid's knee, no.
No.
And tennis elbow is different.
Yes, tennis elbow is different.
Frank, this is writer's cramp.
Yes, absolutely right. Well done. 2 marks. Dennis Norden, who was Michelangelo Titmarsh?
Victorian, it sounds.
Yes, Victorian. Yeah.
Thackeray, is it?
Yes. Well done.
That's brilliant.
Well, come on, you sort of finish it off.
It's William Makepeace.
Yeah.
Why would a man with a name like William Makepeace Thackeray call himself, what was it, Trotty?
He called himself Michelangelo Titmarsh. Yes, well, for a long time, he didn't think writing was all that respectable, and so a lot of his stuff appeared under a false name or pseudonym, and particularly in around about 1840, the Paris sketchbook and the great Hoggarty diamond came under this Titmarsh label. Anne Scott James, where would you find Mr. Pumblechook, Joe Gargery, and Mr. Jaggers?
Great Expectations.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you want?
That's all he wants. Where would you find
them? Yes, exactly. We found
them.
By Charles Dickens. Yeah.
Charles Dickens.
Yes, a Victorian writer.
Yes, that'll do. Frank Muir, what does the name Hugh Lofting bring to your mind? And what was the surprising gift of his most famous character?
Yes, he wrote a marvellous children's book. In fact, several about the same character, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. 12.
And the character was Dr. Doolittle.
Yes. And his gift?
His gift was he could talk to animals.
Yes.
But there doesn't seem anything special about that, because I can talk to animals. And the animals can talk to me. But in his case, he could understand the process.
Well, I can't give you 3 marks for being as good as Dr. Doolittle, but this is quite right. Hugh Lofting created the character Dr. Doolittle, and there's now a film, as we all know, about him. And his gift was to understand, and this is the important thing, be understood by birds and beasts and animals of all sorts. Well, the next round is a round of odd expressions. I want the team members to tell me, for 2 marks, what they mean with reference to their origins. Dillis Powell, what is known, or was known, as a Newgate fringe?
A Newgate fringe?
Yeah.
Being hanged?
No, it's different.
It's the rope round your neck.
Well, you're getting very near it.
Beard.
2 marks. A Newgate fringe, sometimes called a Newgate frill or collar, was a beard in which the hair was worn under the chin and the rest of the face was shaven, so that it occupied much the same position as the rope around a man's neck would have occupied that finally would hang him. Dennis Norden, what was a Paddington Fair, F-A-I-R, a Paddington Fair?
A Paddington Fair was a public hanging.
Why was it called a fair?
Because people used to come along and they'd bring food and buy things from stalls.
Absolutely right. 2 marks. It was a public execution, Paddington Fair, and Tyburn was jolly near Marble Arch. I mean, just says to locate it in that neighbourhood, which fell inside, and still does, I suppose, the parish of Paddington.
It used, in fact, to be a bronze plaque in the middle of the road.
Yes.
Where Marble Arch was.
Yeah.
Which, in memory to all the people who lost their lives there, the number of which was added to whenever people bent down in the middle of the traffic.
Well, the point about Paddington Fair is that an extremely jolly time was had by everybody except one. Now, Anne Scott James, the pain was excruciating.
The pain, well, it means the pain from the cross.
Yeah.
Excruciating means, well, just that.
Yeah, 2 marks. It means pain...
The pain of crucifixion.
Yes, okay. Intense as to be almost unbearable, and it meant originally, as Anne says, such pain as a person suffers by being crucified, from the Latin crux crucis. 2 marks. Frank Muir, do you know what is a kissing crust?
In the village of Helmsley in North Yorkshire, on Bubbling Thursday, the maidens and the men gather in the village square, and a rhubarb pie is baked of one stick of rhubarb, which you can imagine is fairly long and thin. And the crust on top is about an inch wide and about 1 foot long. And the girl who fancies the boy takes one end of the crust from her mouth and starts nibbling and gives the other end to the boy. And when their lips meet, they kiss, you see. And that is a kissing crust. Prove me wrong. Without your books to hand.
Well, I've been in Helmsley and I've never seen the girls behaving like that. That's all I can say. It's the crust where the lower portion of a cottage loaf meets and kisses the upper portion, or it could also be, this is where Frank was nearest, it could also be the undercrust in a pudding or a pie. Now we have a round about anonymous verses, and all these ones which are coming up are classified in the reference books and anthologies as anonymous, as author. For 2 marks, can you please finish these snatches that you hear, or, as they're anonymous and nobody therefore will mind, you can supply, if you like, your own following lines, if you don't know the original ones, and I'll judge you on your own originality. Beginning with Dilys Powell. Don't care, didn't care. Don't care was wild. Don't care stole plum and pear like any beggar's child. Don't care was made to care. Don't care was hung.
I thought don't care was put in the oven and baked till he was brown.
All right, fair enough. Too much. It's not exactly as I have it, but I'm sure there are many versions. You're a baker, and this is a boiler. My version goes, don't care was made to care, don't care was hung, don't care was put in the pot and boiled till he was done. Still, I mean, good oven yours. That's right. Too much. Dennis Norden. Boys and girls come out to play. The moon doth shine as bright as day.
Boys and girls come out to play. The moon doth shine as bright as day. Sing and dance and shout hooray. The police just towed Dad's car away.
Two and a half out of two for ingenuity. My version, and it's only mine, I'm sure, is boys and girls come out to play. The moon does shine as bright as day. Leave your supper and leave your sleep. Come with your playfellows into the street. Come with a whistle, come with a call, come with a goodwill, or come not at all. Dennis's I prefer. Now, Anne Scott James. If wishes were horses, beggars would ride.
Oh, goodness. If wishes were women, they'd ride side by side. That isn't very good.
The original version is, if wishes were horses, beggars would ride. If turnips were watches, I'd wear one by my side. And now, Frank Muir. And when it was night, so sad was their plight, the sun it went down, and the moon gave no light, they sobbed and they sighed, and they bitterly cried.
They lay down and die.
Yes, that's right.
All right. So in your oven and fried. You're being a rather good oven.
This is a poem about the poor babes in the wood. And the last part of it runs, and the sun it went down, and the moon gave no light, they sobbed and they sighed, and they bitterly cried, and the poor little things, they lay down and died. Now we come to the last round. We'll go back to those two quotations I gave the teams earlier in the program. For 2 marks, Dilys Powell, can you give me the origin of your quotation? And I was desolate and sick of an old passion.
It's from a poem by Ernest Dowson.
Yes, go ahead.
It begins or ends or has summer in the middle. I have been faithful to you or thee, Sinara, in my fashion.
Yes, we have to call her Sinara, otherwise she doesn't... Yes.
Sinara, is
it? Yes. It's absolutely right. You get to 2 marks.
Ernest Quaderet pro bono publico, it's called.
No.
Yes,
yes,
it is.
Ernest Dowson wrote this poem about this girl, and it's got a Latin title, Known Sum Qualis Aram.
Well,
and
yeah.
We all
yes.
Argue fiercely as to whether she should be called Sinara, which fits the rhyme, or Sinara, which other people seem to prefer. 2 marks. Anne Scott James, can I have the origin of your quotation? A soft answer, turneth away wrath.
Well, I think it's from the Old Testament, and I would think it's from the Book of Proverbs.
You're absolutely dead right, and you get to 2 marks. It's Proverbs 15:1. A soft answer turneth away wrath. Well, now I'm going to ask Frank and Dennis to give me their explanation of how these quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever unlikely explanation receives the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So first of all, back to Frank Muir and to his quotation, and I was desolate and sick of an old passion.
I don't know, I've gone off. I don't think I'll give a story. I've gone off this evening. I've gone all mouldy. The blooming producer, Tony Schwein. Well, I was late, you know, coming in this evening. He said, "You're late, dead liberty." And he was the cause of it. Well, you see, what happened was that I got this garbled message this afternoon through from his secretary, Hedda Garbler, and it said, "Would I collect on my way to the studio something for Tony which he'd left at this Chinese restaurant?" And I said, "Oh, all right." You know, and I whizzed off this Chinese restaurant, and I collected this thing, which was a rolled up, very tatty sheepskin rug. And, also rather smelly, really. And I wandered blithely, hurried along the road with this thing, sort of playing with it and throwing it up in the air and kicking it and everything. And I had it in my arm, under my arm, actually, and I suddenly realised it was getting warm. I thought this was rather odd, you know, some sort of internal combustion inside the thing. I suddenly realised, on close inspection, that it wasn't a rolled-up old mat at all. It was a very, very old Persian cat who was looking at me with considerable malevolence, his horrible beady eyes. It was so mangy that it looked as though it was a rug, the inside of a rug. Very disturbing. But I'm not very good with cats, I'll be frank. I'm not a cat man. I am not. And here I was with this rigid, very elderly, malevolent Persian cat. I said, "Right, right, old Ma Khayyam." And I fixed her with a look. And she gave a sort of sweep of a hairy elbow. And my hair had four partings in it. Now, I thought the cats could sheathe their claws. She had these sort of little miniature scimitars at the end of her feet. And they didn't seem, whether the retraction mechanism had got a bit dodgy with age or something, she didn't pull them in at all. And what's that going to do with this thing, you know? And it started working through my suit with them, obviously trying to get at my liver. And I thought I'd better take some action. So I shoved it in my overcoat pocket, or rather her, and held tightly the sides of the pocket so that her head stuck out. You see, and there she couldn't harm me. That was fine. She went rigid again. She obviously had a drill. She went rigid till she could think of some way of getting at me, you see. And suddenly my left side began to get very hot. And then it started to get cold. And cold. And cold. And my ankle felt a bit damp. Old Ma Khayyam had struck again. So I whisked her out, nipped in to a convenient ironmonger's and bought a ball of string. Not cheap hairy string, and not the very expensive sort of slightly shiny white stuff. Just an ordinary ball of string. So I thought, if I put this round her neck and paid it out, our mutual hate will start such that she would keep her distance. And anyway, by about 30 yards of the string, by the time she'd gallop towards me, I'd have time to take evasive action before the scimitars dug in. Well, that worked quite well, because she was so offended at this that she went into a rigid act again. And then Madam suddenly came out of her trance. She thought of what to do, which was simple, really. And that was to sprint round and round me as I walked. My legs would then be twined round, and I'd crash to the pavement, injuring my elbow. It was a terribly good plan for a cat, because it worked perfectly. After thudding to the ground about four times and only making about a yard, I eventually realised the only way to combat this was, as she was running in a clockwise direction, for me to revolve rapidly in an anti-clockwise direction. And so we proceeded, very slowly, down Lower Regent Street. I get to the foyer. I get there. And he says, "You're late. You're late." Well, I disregard this as the most inadequate summing up of the situation. I was late, true, but I was a little more than that. It would take a line from Ernest Dowson to explain my condition. Late I was, but more. I was dizzy late and sick of an old Persian.
Well, if Frank isn't on next week's programme, you'll know the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals has called in the meantime. And now we go back to Dennis Norton, and if you remember, his quotation was, "A soft answer turneth away wrath."
This is a slogan, an advertising slogan, which can be seen all over Spain, and particularly in the area round Barcelona, thanks to me. But really thanks to Twiggy. Now, if there's anyone who has never heard of Twiggy, such as a 5-year-old girl who's been brought up in a lighthouse, she is a top model. She's very talented. She's also, I've seen on television, very honest, sincere, frank, open, straight from the shoulder. And what she has done, though, that has altered the scene in this country, is she's brought about a revolution in women's shapes. Now, card players will know the expression stick or bust. Well, present position is bust is out, stick is in. As you can see, a revolution. But every revolution has its casualties. And in this case, the casualties consist of a formerly very popular item of feminine equipment, which were known as falsies, which one may describe, if you're unfamiliar with them, delicately as perhaps aid to underdeveloped areas. At the moment, it is trendy to be underdeveloped, and the aids have gone by the board. Board is another good word in this connection. Now, just imagine what this has done, what ruin and desolation and despair this has brought to the manufacturers of falsies. I was taken by one to his warehouse. He said, "Look." And there, from floor to ceiling, 50,000 semicircular pads of soft foam rubber. "What am I going to do with them?" he said. And I had an inspiration. "Spain," I said. "Spain," he echoed, interrogatively. So I will explain. What I had in mind was flamenco dancing. Flamenco dancing, as you know, is the national dance of Spain, and it consists of drumming your heels, the flat of your heels, rhythmically against the floor. And it was originated by the gypsies when they lived in the caves outside Barcelona. But you see, it's now a dying art, because they don't live in the caves anymore. They all live in the flats. And they've got neighbours. You can't practice. So that is the end to which I put his 50,000 pairs of falsies. You still don't understand. Honestly, you'll have to try. They are sold as soft foam rubber heels for flamenco dancers who don't want to annoy the people downstairs. Now do you see? And now do you see why they have these slogans all over Spain now, particularly near Barcelona, thanks to Twiggy? Everywhere it says, "A soft dancer turneth away wrath."
Well, by your vote, the story from Dennis Norden wins, and his team, that is Anne Scott James and Dennis, win the entire contest by 1.5 marks. And that brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC. Thank you.